Mobility. What does this word even mean? Better yet, how do different businesses in the automotive and transportation space perceive mobility? According to Cities, mobility is associated with the movement of people and goods. Movement of people and goods on scooters or e-bikes is defined as micromobility. The ability to move hundreds of people is defined as mass movement, and the mode of mobility is that of light rail. In a dealership environment, mobility has been reserved for disabled persons, where when a customer buys a car, it's usually a van, and that van is converted into a mobility van. This van is gutted on the interior for wheelchair access, or the suspension is modified to lower the van closer to the ground in order to have a proper ramp. This has been the traditional understanding of mobility in a dealership environment. It is no surprise then that most dealerships aren't quite sure what to think about when a new term like mobility as a service or MaaS is thrown in their direction. Perhaps a great starting point is to understand the applications of the software in a city environment. On today's show, we hear from Sam Baker. He serves as a co-founder and the chief operating officer of Wonder Mobility. Through their business operation, they are proving that you can unify the movement of people and goods through a single technology platform, where operations like carpooling, or fleet management, or rental management, or parking utilization can both be an internal tool and it can also provide a new revenue source. Understanding the real-world applications of a technology platform makes clear how the term mobility will be redefined in a dealership environment, so stay tuned to hear more about this. This episode was recorded at Digital Dealer 27 in Las Vegas and was made possible by Automotive Mastermind, the leaders in predictive analytics, and ReRaw Irish Pub, located at the shops at Mandalay Bay. Thank you for your support of Wisco Weekly. Now it's time for our listener car story, but this time, it's a car selling story. Kim from Laguna Beach, California, needed to unload one car from his fleet of personal vehicles. The unlucky car? A 2006 BMW 325i. It had an original MSRP of $39,000, and its current mileage 13 years later was $134,000. Together, we figured that a good private party asking price was $6,500. The distribution of the car ad was to post the car on cars.com, autotrader.com, and Craigslist. When selling your car private party, you must be able to make a compelling case for the car, especially when it's older and has a lot of miles. You'll need to consider how competitive the price is, what the condition is of the car, how is the service history? Are there any elements about the car that you can just be purely blunt about? After 5 days on the market and entertaining three leads and inviting one prospective buyer to see and drive the car, Kim was able to sell his car for the asking price. Stay tuned for later on the show to hear how we instructed Kim to advertise his car. Now, let's get into the show.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Mabuhay, bienvenidos, vitete, velkommen, and welcome to Wisco Weekly. Listeners, we have some breaking news for you here. I am very proud, honored, and just absolutely thrilled for my good friend, transportation correspondent, Muni Bond attorney, stand-up comic, dystopian writer, and now Forbes contributor. Ladies and gentlemen, please congratulate and welcome new Forbes contributor, Mr. Rudy Salo.
Thank you. I'd be remiss as a lawyer if I didn't correct you. That's Forbes.com. And I'm, as a contributor, I'm an independent contractor, which is a separate legal relationship. I'm sorry, this is what they told me to say in the contract. But thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
So you're basically just a blogger.
I'm a blogger.
Okay.
I'm a blogger on a site called Forbes.com.
Amen to that.
It's an upgrade from a podcast.
I would say so.
Promotion.
I would say so. It is big time promotion. It's going to go in the bio for sure.
Well, Rudy, seriously, I'm absolutely thrilled that I know many people on the show probably don't see it, but I see all the hard work you've been putting in. And so I'm glad that it's paying off.
Much
and more people will get to hear you. Holy cow, more people are going to get to hear you.
The reason why the people have not seen the hard work is because they haven't seen me face to face. But if they saw the gray hairs in my beard, that this is every single gray hair is a sleepless night.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Well, listeners, you're tuned into Wisco Weekly. This is the podcast giving you university education on the automotive and mobility space. I'm your host, Dennis Wisco. We have an amazing, 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 amazing episode here today. And I, you know, if I'm saying that so many times, there's good reason for it. I had the chance to look around at some of the companies that are attending Digital Dealer. And there was one company that really stuck out to me on why the hell they are here. And we're going to learn more about why they are here. But today's guest is Sam Baker, who serves as the co-founder and COO of Wonder Mobility. Sam has a very interesting background, having attended Santa Clara University. He is a proud Bronco. And he also, as we just found out, was raised as a Jesuit or attended Jesuit high school. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Sam Baker to the show.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate you having me.
Sam, I got to ask a question for you. Did you even know Santa Clara were called the Broncos? I just have to know an honest answer.
Before I attended Santa Clara, I had no idea. No need to really know, to be honest.
Look, I know Santa Clara just from Steve Nash. That's the only reason why I would know Santa Clara.
Okay, so you're a fan?
I'm a fan of Santa Clara, actually. As a matter of fact, I discovered Santa Clara too late that I already committed to UC Irvine. Had I not committed to UC Irvine, I would have definitely liked to have applied to Santa Clara University.
So
I mean, that goes in line with, obviously, our high school that we went to.
Well, of course, many of our classmates, we went to Servite in Anaheim, a all-guy Catholic school, hence the awkward weirdness of Dennis and me. If you would have went to San Jose, to the Silicon Valley in the mid kind of 90s, who knows where you'd be right now, for crying out loud.
I'd be right here in this room.
Me?
Yeah.
You would be. You'd be sharing eye contact just
That's
like
right.
we are. Thank you, brother. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Well, Sam, so there's a lot of things that we want to get to today in talking about Wonder Mobility and yourself. I think you have a very interesting trajectory on how you got to this current position and just being involved with Wonder Mobility. But I understand you're a big podcaster or a big listener of podcasts. So I was hoping that maybe you could share with us some of your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. So first, to be clear, this is my first podcast. I'm extremely excited about it. So thank you so much for the invitation.
It's wonderful.
But I personally love listening to podcasts. And if I could share one recommendation from my listening feed in the past weeks, it's been a show called Moonrise. And on this anniversary of the moon landing, it's the Washington Post that put out a series that describes the origins of the moon race all the way back into the 1920s and 30s with science fiction writers who were describing the potential for going to the moon. And all the guys in the US, in Germany, and in Russia, believe it or not, in parallel, reading the same science fiction books and dreaming about going to the moon.
That's fascinating.
Can I talk
go
now?
Ahead, Rudy.
Can
go
I talk
ahead.
Now? So I'm a science fiction writer, and I write a lot about what I want to see in the future. And a lot of what my future entails is this driverless utopia that we're going to talk about here on the show, about not solely there being only personal vehicles and a driverless car system. And I guess I'm trying to influence the children out there, the children listeners of trying to think of the future, much like Moonrise.
It's so only going
to
take 100 years.
That's fine. I plan on living forever. So, because another part of my science fiction writing is artificial intelligence and how we're just going to transfer our brains into cyborg bodies. So, if anyone out there is interested in that, let me know.
Okay, so Sam, let's I'm real curious. I want to start with you personally. So, you attended Santa Clara University and you studied finance. And you worked a variety of jobs, and now you are you serve as a co-founder and CEO of Wonder Mobility. When did mobility become of great interest to you?
It's a great question. I think there's, on the one hand, sort of a high-level reason, and then there's a more practical reason for it. And the high-level reason is that I had the great fortune during my education at Santa Clara to get exposure to lots of different living contexts around the world through trips to Latin America, and then through my ability to be able to travel after school, I got a chance to visit a lot of sort of major urban centers around the world and see, on the one hand, how people live. And then when I myself moved to Latin America after school to start a company there to provide technology access to small entrepreneurs, I lived in an environment where it was really difficult to get around all the time. And so if you kind of take a step back and you kind of look at global trends, something like 50% of the world's population are living in cities today, that percentage is going to only increase over time. And cities are getting larger and larger and more complex. And with that come all sorts of challenges like just getting around every day, health conditions, and stress is another issue as well. And for me, these are things that I, just for a sliver of my life, and I can't complain because I think I'm very fortunate in the life that I've had so far, for a sliver of my life, I've encountered and seen firsthand some of those challenges that people face. So this kind of question of what is the role of cities going to be in the future, and how are we actually going to physically live in them, right? I mean, if we're adding cars to the streets all the time and pollution is increasing all of it, like, are we going to actually be able to live in cities? So that's sort of a more philosophical area of interest for me based on my background. But to be honest with you, there's also a really practical and somewhat selfish reason why I'm interested in mobility. When I moved back to San Francisco, I lived without a car in Latin America for years and got by just fine. But then I moved back to the States and I said, well, I got to get a car. And I was living in the city with a car. And what was the first thing that happened to me is I was getting parking tickets all the time. And I'm not just talking about like your regular run of the mill parking tickets. I'm talking about San Francisco parking tickets.
Were you at least paying them on time, or did you let all the late fees accumulate?
No, you have to pay them on time because the base price is like $300.
You don't see the missing limbs? He lost an arm and a leg over there. You don't see that.
And the straw that broke the camel's back was the $900 towing ticket. And I thought, oh my gosh, because the car gets towed, right? You got to go to pick it up, and then you basically pay for the towing, which is like $500 or $600. And then when you get to your car in the lot, there's another ticket on the car, which is your penalty from the city. And I thought, I can't handle this anymore. And at the same time, I saw an online ad for a service called Flight Car. I'm not sure if you guys remember.
Flight Car?
Yeah, no, it's about 2011, 2012.
I've never heard of that at all.
Yeah.
Okay, so get this. So Flight Car was offering me the chance to bring my car to the San Francisco airport. I could leave it there indefinitely. And anybody who's flying into San Francisco and wanted to get a rental car could rent my car on a peer-to-peer basis.
Yeah, that's like Turo OG. It's like OG kinda, Turo, right? Isn't that what it was?
Time. Exactly. Exactly. And so for me, it was just solving a simple pain, which was I couldn't get my act together in order to coordinate shifting my car around on street sweeping days.
Yeah.
So I said, I'm just going to push my car over to this sharing service at Flight Car. I left it there for a few weeks, a few months went by, and I just realized like, hey, I'm getting around town on lifts, I'm riding my bike, I'm using the Muni. I mean, I don't really need a car. And eventually I just left my car there for like 18 months. And I'm like, I'm just getting by living based on mobility services.
Wait, so did you make any money though off of that?
Don't get me wrong, the service was great to me because it solved real pain, but I didn't make any money at the
end. Wait, hold on a second, pal. Fair. Did you not hear about how many parking tickets he was paying? Of course he made money. He made money by not paying off those parking tickets.
Save money.
I've got saying what you said in a lot of ways, both the high level and the other reasons, somewhat similar story to mine, unpacking everything, in that I grew up with a grandmother who immigrated to this country. She didn't have a driver's license in the country that she lived in because they didn't need one. She didn't need one. And when she came here, we lived in suburban Orange County. So she knew if she needed to get around, she had to teach herself. Imagine, she came here, she learned English, and then she taught herself how to get around in North Orange County. She taught herself how to use the bus, combination bus dial, right? And she instilled that in me. Like, in me, she's like, I don't need a car, I can get around. So from a very young age, I was with this grandmother who lived with us, who taught me you don't necessarily need to have a car, okay? I also lived in Latin America. My first legal job was in Mexico City. I didn't have a car. I only used buses to get around. I went to law school in DC. I didn't have a car. And so that was instilled in me my whole life. Of course, after law school, came back, moved back to LA, had to have a car, had to get around. But I did get rid of a car for about a year in the year 2007. But there was no Lyft. There was no Uber. There were no scooters. I lived a mile away from a train stop.
There was no Turo.
Yeah, no, there was nothing in 2007. So I had to walk to and from that train stop, which was kind of a pain point. Lost a bunch of weight, looked really good, but still eventually would rent a lot of cars and went back and actually got a car. But the passion of like not wanting to have a car was there. You said 2011. It is the technology that has been able to solve the problem. Technology has been able to fill the gap that thankfully you can live without a car these days if you really choose to. If you really choose to, and you're lucky enough to live in a city or near a city, you can do it. I mean, that's what was missing.
Well, speaking of the technology, I mean, we're also now looking at how companies have evolved in their technology, where you do have companies such as Uber and Bird who have their own platform or ecosystem that run their assets, but you also have a kind of a new technological change, which is that of Wonder Mobility. You guys are just the platform. I know you guys are looking at building your own assets, but you guys are just a platform to empower existing operations who have physical assets to help manage their mobility company, or to help manage their fleet, correct?
Yeah, I think so. When I met my co-founder, Gunnar is the CEO of Wonder Mobility in San Francisco. He was talking to me about the potential to be able to provide a mobility platform, but on a broad scale globally. And for us, the target at the time, or the interest, was, okay, how can we provide mobility services or platform that enables mobility services for the masses, and not just a small segment of the population? And that's really driven Wonder's mission. Is if at the end of the day, our goal is how do we improve the quality of life in cities? To your point, Rudy, there's going to be a lot of different types of transportation modes in the future that are needed to be able to support folks, whether they're living in the city or even in rural areas. And to be frank, like if I'm living in a rural area, I might need to own a car for a long period of time before it makes sense for me to access a mobility service, right? In an urban environment today, in many cities in North America or even in other mega cities around the world, there are lots of mobility services that are emerging. So I don't think it just comes down to one particular solution. And what Wonder is doing is we're providing a sort of mobility operating system of sorts that's very open and very flexible. We can interact with all different types of assets. And we also can provide our technology to cities and companies of all different sizes. You know, we don't have any ego about working with a small town in Kentucky all the way up to metropolitan Manila in the Philippines, or a large OEM like a Toyota all the way down to a small fleet operating company. For us to be able to provide this open platform that is flexible in terms of how it interacts is a really important part of our mission.
Let me ask you a really quick question on this, just so our listeners know, and just so I know. And then you can go into the details of it. Should Wonder Mobility, and when it launches in the United States, if I understand everything correctly, me, on those very few times when I choose to drive to downtown LA, and when I drive into downtown LA, there's the 110 express lane, and if I have somebody in the car with me, I can ride on that express lane for free. So if I say, gee, I really wish I could carpool today, I really wish I had somebody in the car, I should be, God willing, Wonder Mobility, when that launches here, you're going to pair me with somebody that needs to also go into downtown LA, and we can work together on our trip and then go together. Is that correct? Do I have that correct?
Yes, one of our products called Wonder Carpool is exactly that. It's matching people who are going in the same direction.
I love. I'm serious about this. That is amazing.
So I guess one of the things I would kind of question about the carpooling model is you've deployed this. This platform in Manila and also in Brazil. Delhi, New Delhi.
That's
too?
Correct.
And in Brazil, right?
That's down. Correct.
Yeah, in Brazil.
Yeah.
So I could see almost, you know, carpooling maybe being more relevant there. Does carpooling still have a market here in the U.S.? according to what you see?
Besides this guy sitting right here, of course.
Yeah, but
you didn't just hear me.
No, you're one person. We're talking about he has data that would support it. This is anecdotal.
Yeah, so carpooling in the context of more developed markets is really interesting, right? Because if we're talking about emerging market megacities, if you offer a carpooling platform, the incentive can oftentimes be money. However, in a more developed market, it's very difficult to incentivize people with enough money to make them go out of their way to pick up people on their way to work, because you're not a taxi driver at the end of the day. Uh-huh. So one of the things that we found, and this is the case in Europe at the moment, is that if you have large office buildings that are constrained in terms of the parking spaces that are available, you can actually incent people by giving them preferred parking and reserved parking spaces.
Gee, brilliant.
To share rides on the way to work. And this is how the technology works. Now, to be clear, our customer is the company that is implementing this carpooling technology and this parking technology.
Business to business.
Yeah, that's how our business model works. But from a practical everyday standpoint, you open an application as an employee of this company. You can see the other employees that are in your area that you can take with on your way to work if you're the driver who owns the car. When you arrive at the parking structure that is owned by your company, the app knows and verifies that you have been indeed carpooling with other employees. And there is a visual scanning technology at the gate to the parking garage that can read the license plate number of your car and verify that you have given a carpool with other employees. And it automatically opens the gate based on the visual scanning and lets you into a preferred parking spot.
That's unbelievable.
And that sounds kind of cool and sci-fi-y.
Yeah.
But what's even more interesting from a business standpoint is that it costs actual money to invest in parking infrastructure. So in a European context, it's something like $30,000 to build a new parking space. And one building that we've done this with in Munich, they've got 4,000 employees and they have 300 parking spaces. And one option for them is, let's just build more parking spaces. Another thing they can do, and this is what we've already implemented, is actually reduce the need to have further parking spaces by something like 20-30% just by implementing a carpooling program with parking incentives. And if you can save 20% on parking spaces where the average parking space costs $30,000 per year to build, you're saving real money. And that's what we really love about these sort of sharing concepts and these sharing technologies, is it's not just about the environment and getting people together and social. And that's all great. And we love that as part of our impact of our business. Even better, we can actually have an economic impact on our customers.
Do you see the, this is why I'm so excited about this. Do you see the revolutionary impacts this could have on real estate in urban areas where a lot of it is being wasted on parking spaces right now? And there's a huge affordable housing crisis throughout California, throughout, you know, in many major metropolitan areas. There's affordable housing crisis. Solving this problem, if you're talking about reducing parking spaces by 30% and maybe using that vital real estate, it can really change things. I'm telling you,
it's also incentivizing too. I love that element about it. It's incentivizing people to carpool by having preferred parking. I mean, that's a legitimate case right there.
Let alone preferred parking in California. And I know this as an infrastructure finance attorney. I've worked on some of these projects. Express lanes, which are, you know, you can access the carpool lane in Southern California. You can pay a fee if you're a single driver, or if you have 2 to 3 people, you can get it for free. So it'll actually incentivize drivers to carpool more. Like, I try to carpool as much as humanly possible right now in order to access that lane for free. Now, here's the counterintuitive part of this entire thing. Those express lanes are supposed to go a lot faster than the other lanes. If you guys are as successful as I hope you are, you know, maybe those carpool lanes don't go as fast as everything else, but I'm a big believer in building less roads, not more roads, but utilizing the roads that we have. But still, that's another way to incentivize express lanes as well as preferred parking. It's excellent, really.
So Sam, this is Wonder Carpooling. You're here at a dealer conference, and I understand that there are companies that are slowly in this mobility space that are looking to attract more dealership business. But, you know, in general, I still don't see a firm place for mobility yet in the dealership world. So what the hell are you doing here?
It's a fair question. So I alluded to a little bit in the beginning of our conversation that we have a portfolio of different technology products, okay, all sort of under the banner of how can we increase the utilization rate of assets that are already on the road. And certainly one of the challenges that we understand in the dealership world is, what do? We have an existing fleet of cars that are there that maybe not used all the time. And from a customer standpoint, if I wanted to be able to access those fleets, I would actually have to go through a physical person, right? So if I were to go to a dealer and I were to say, loan a car when my car is being repaired, I have to speak to someone physically and I have to be given a key, and there has to be a paperwork process that is done, which is very inefficient and time consuming. On the other hand, what if I, as an end consumer, could download an app, and then in that app, I could book a car for a predefined period of time. Then I can pay for that car, or maybe I get a voucher if I have a specific relationship with that dealer. And then finally, I can use the app to actually walk up to the car and then unlock the car using a digital key in the app.
Would the app be branded by the dealership, or would it be a Wonder branded app?
100% dealer branded. They own all the data. It's all their customer information. Yeah,
I'm
seeing this.
What's actually appropriate about Sam explaining all this is that at Digital Dealer, he is participating in the Tech Tank competition, which is similar to a Shark Tank. So he's going to be explaining what Wonder Mobility does, and then he's going to have to defend it against some car dealer sharks.
Digging it.
So, you know, I along those lines, though, let me be the first one to cast the first stone. And this is actually where I would disagree with dealerships on this sense, because dealers definitely want it branded. They definitely want it branded.
Right.
I think that's actually a failed proposition, because if you're branding it solely by a dealer, that is a very, very small ecosystem that a dealer is servicing their customers. It almost seems to be that it's a Wonder brand sponsored by a dealership, because then at that point you can incorporate the carpooling element, you can incorporate the renting element and the fleet element. No?
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. Let me say that we're a very, very flexible platform, and we're also in discussions with a few businesses that are also operating at the sort of inter-dealership layer. So our sort of value proposition as a business is we're really willing to work with any company, any partner of all sizes to deploy mobility solutions, all the way from an OEM all the way down to a small startup. So it can be the case in the future, and is very likely, that we're going to have customers that are building national networks of dealers and serving them using our technology. But if a dealer comes to us and says, hey, I'd rather have my own system and manage this on my own, then that's totally fine as
Actually,
well.
You know what? You need a dealer group. That's what you need. AutoNation, you need Penske, you need... You need the big dealer groups, because again, I really see the biggest benefit of your platform, because your platform is quite amazing. You almost need it across. You need to be able to go beyond what a dealership can offer, or unless a dealership can also integrate some kind of scooters into their program, you know, in addition to their own fleet. So you guys are developing your own assets too, correct?
How do you define assets?
Like a scooter, a bike. Are you guys developing your own bike to put on your platform?
That's not something that we're developing at the moment. We work with a range of different IoT.
Oh, I thought I read something about that.
IoT or telematics providers, market-leading solutions, as well as the vehicles themselves that often have these connection points that we can interact with. So we're working with most of the leading manufacturers on that. And we have a very open approach to this. So we'll say, look, if you're a dealer and you want to integrate three different brands of cars into the application with three different types of IoT or connectivity devices, we can totally do that. And I think that this is an important point in our perspective as we're looking at and trying to understand the US market more, is that it seems to be that the consumer as well as the business really values choice.
Yes.
And the choice to say, look, I don't know what type of assets I will have or vehicles I will have 5 years from now. I want it to be open to connect with all types of vehicles.
Right.
I want to know that my customer data is my customer data, and I can market to them however I want to for my business's needs. And I would love to be able to scale up or scale down. And so that sort of degree of having choice is something that's really important. And we feel that choice will also trickle down to end consumers. There's plenty of space in this emerging transportation market for different actors of all sizes, whether it's a fleet management company or a local taxi firm, or whether it's a large municipal group or a city that wants to deploy their own service. We're designing our technology to be applicable in all of those types of contexts. When we entered the market in 2014, there were very ominous signs of people saying there is no room for new mobility technology companies with Uber and Lyft, especially Uber, in the trajectory that they have. We were told by investors at the time, why would we invest in any technology that relates to transportation when Uber is so dominant? As if somehow one company could own this multi-trillion dollar global transportation market from top to bottom in all use cases, from tourism to school buses and all this stuff.
Wait, hold on. Yeah. To be fair to Uber, they try to own it all. I mean, come on, let's be fair. I mean, they convinced even some of those investors. I mean, that's what those companies are supposed to do.
Impressive how much they've grown. We feel that with the diversity in the market, if you look globally, if you look even just in the United States, there needs to be more flexibility to serve each individual business case. And there's plenty of room for players of all sizes, as long as the technology is accessible. And that's a really important thing. And that's how we're positioning ourselves, is we're saying we want our technology to be accessible for different players of all sizes, but we also don't want to compromise on quality. That's a really important part as well, because the thing is if the service doesn't work like an Uber service works, meeting the basic requirements of the end customer, then we're not going anywhere, right?
I got to ask a question. The countries that you did launch, and I'm sorry to keep, I know Wonder Mobility is a lot more than what I'm talking about, but I'm just so attracted to this as an individual because it really spoke to me. But the carpooling aspect of your service, why did you choose the countries that you chose?
It's really important for us, for Wonder Mobility as a company, to go where there are high degrees of pain. Because we are working so hard at what we're doing because we actually want to bring solutions to people that have problems. And so when we took a look at the global landscape and said we have a carpooling product that can enable folks who have cars to share rides on their way to work and be able to recover some of the cost of owning a vehicle, you got to look for places in the world where the pain threshold of car ownership is high because the income levels are relatively low compared to car ownership.
Okay.
And where there are very few alternatives, right? So you might say, well, why don't people just take more buses in Manila? Well, I would challenge you to take a bus in Manila and then see why, if you can afford a car, why you would choose to drive a car every day instead of taking a public bus.
I have taken a bus in Mexico City and I've taken buses in other countries. I've never taken a bus in Manila. What's it like? Do you know? I mean, I'm curious, really. I just want to know.
It's very hot.
Okay.
And, well, and I mean, I've only seen the images. I haven't been back to the Philippines in a long time.
That's
actually embarrassing.
Top of my list.
But it's extremely, extremely crowded, and crowded in a way too that nobody adheres to rules there. There's not. I mean, even though they got all the painted lines and lights, like definitely in America, more people are paying attention to the right of way kind of driving. Not over there. It's still very third world country in terms of its like trying to get around. Am I right in saying?
So it's an excellent market to deploy a sharing solution like that, because folks are responding to the challenges of getting to work every day and spending 2 hours going to work and 2 hours going home on average. These are real numbers.
Terrible.
By whenever possible, buying a private vehicle and driving it to work, and you have a little bit more comfort with the air conditioning and the radio and everything like that. And so if you come in and we say, look, you have traffic jams like crazy, but there are 3 to 4 empty seats in that car, let's try to fill them. This car's already on the street. It's just like a total no-brainer for society and for the city itself.
Do you have
that's why we'd go to a place like that.
Do you have without divulging any secrets or anything, but do you have government support in that? Oh no, this is great. Wonder Mobility is solving a problem here in Manila. We support them. Or how did that work? How did that work with working with them?
Yeah, so I'll give you an example. Right now we're working with the largest university in the Philippines and deploying a private carpooling network for their students, because they're having massive problems with the space that they have on campus, with everyone bringing their own private car, actually filling the cars in the parking spaces that are available. There's just simply not enough space. So this is an example of a public institution that is something that is, but there's a real problem, and we are able to deploy a technology solution which is essentially, from a cost perspective, negligible in the overall budget, but actually has a real impact on the student's quality of life. So this is a way that we can actually deploy our technology in a way that impacts local communities.
Good for you, man. That's great.
So, you know, one thing that I would like to start arguing for, and this kind of would, in contrast to, let's say, public institutions, for private companies and specifically dealerships, I would like to see dealerships start working with cities more. I'm certain you will not be asked this question today, or you have to defend, you know, this question, but is there a possibility for Wonder Mobility to help dealerships work with cities more?
Absolutely. I think that one of the things that is underappreciated, let's say, in new mobility services is to the extent at which fleet management is going to be a part of the future of mobility. Even if we're talking about autonomous vehicle fleets, who's going to manage those fleets? Who's going to own them? Who's going to do the maintenance? Who's going to clean them? Who's going to make sure they're at the right place at the right time? Someone's got to tell them where to be. Yes, they drive themselves, but it's just replacing the driver. You still have to do the physical things that are required to have a physical vehicle in the real world. Yep. And so when you have a dealership that is an expert at managing those assets and making sure they're at the right place at the right time, that is an essential skill for the future. And I'll be really honest with you, some of the new age operators that are emerging, the technology startups that have very flashy marketing, they are not necessarily experts at operations. Some of the legacy operators in the industry are much more sophisticated and have much more experience with managing these types of challenges in fleets. And some of the new age or startup companies are actually looking to some of the legacy fleet operators and saying, hey, how can we partner up? Because we don't actually have this skill set.
That's what I was going to ask. Are those startup companies at least, I don't want to say the word smart enough, but like they know their own limitations to go, like, we got to go to the experts. These guys have been in the business. They've been doing fleets. They've been cleaning vehicles. They've been going to the maintenance. These guys know what they're doing. We don't know that aspect of the business. Let's combine. Are they doing that?
Absolutely. We have an example of a customer in the Nordics that is deploying a two-wheel scooter sharing solution and has looked to another one of our dealership partners who has a traditional car ownership dealer, a car dealership network. And that dealership network is providing the operational services to distribute the fleet of scooters, provide the maintenance, do the charging and all that kind of stuff.
So
they're actually participating in the new types of mobility services, but using the infrastructure that they already have.
That's the future.
It's a total no-brainer.
See, that's what I'm saying, Rudy.
That is literally what we've talked about on this show. That's where the history of this program and what we are trying to bring to the to everything, exactly what you're talking about, is
brilliant.
What we're hoping will happen.
God, I love that. Well, I'm sorry to cut this off. Sam, I know that you got to get going here, but I'm hoping we can actually do this again. This is obviously just a very short conversation. There's so much to talk about. But man, I love that last part in talking and in incorporating dealerships into this environment. I do have a soft heart for dealerships. I know that there's a lot of people that don't like buying cars, and rightfully, they probably shouldn't like it because, you know, the process is painful. But there are good dealerships out there, and I do want to make sure that those dealerships continue to serve customers, because I am a customer. I'm also a citizen of my local community, and I want solutions that work on both ends of that spectrum. So, listeners, thanks for tuning in to this episode of Wisco Weekly. On behalf of Kelly, Rudy, and myself, cheers, prost, l'chaim, kipis, nastravi, salu, kampai, mabruk, tutsins, gambe, yamas, nastrovie, to the customer experience.
And a big, big thank you to Mr. Sam Baker for joining Wisco Weekly. He just flown in from Germany, which they are 8 hours ahead, and he came directly to Re-Raw Irish Pub to record with us. So thank you to Mr. Sam Baker. Now let's revisit Kim from Laguna Beach and his car selling story. Kim was looking to offload one of his vehicles, a 2006 BMW 325i with 134,000 miles. He wanted to sell the car private party, as he believed there was a market for it. And certainly there was. One important characteristic about Kim's BMW 325i was that it was well cared for. This was undoubtedly the biggest strength of the vehicle. When selling an older, high-mileage vehicle, you can bypass a buyer's bullshit radar by just owning up to the condition of the vehicle. Remember, well cared for doesn't necessarily mean great condition. After all, it's a 13-year-old car, and while the front driver's seat should crack leather, other areas of the car, like the hood and even the engine, were in really good condition. After having the car washed and cleaned, we decided that showing honest pictures of the car was going to tell the best story. So we took pictures of the dent-free and chipless hood, of the grease-free engine, of the cracked leather driver's seat, of the worn-out buttons, of the rims and tires. We wanted to show that even though this was a 13-year-old car with 134,000 miles, that it was still well taken care of by the owner. As you can imagine, if you are a prospective buyer, when you know that a car has been cared for, it bodes more confidence in buying a car that should be as headache-less as possible. And that's exactly what the intention was to do. And it paid off. 5 days later, we met the prospective buyer. The condition of the car matched the expectations the buyer thought of it, and a deal was done in cash. When advertising a car for sale, while it is important to have a competitive price and to ensure the car is in good condition and that you have service records available, keep in mind that you are also trying to demonstrate a good customer experience. And if you can pinpoint what the most appealing aspect of your car is and tell a story around it, you will most certainly put you and your car in a position to entertain serious buyers. Listeners, we are getting close to launching our car concierge service, where we want to be a guide on the side and helping you with buying, selling, maintaining, and modifying your car. So be sure you visit WiscoWeeklyPod.com and sign up to be notified of its official launch. Thanks for tuning in to this episode. Stay tuned to hear from us next week.